Welcome to the Life on Repeat podcast with Laura Valancourt, licensed mental health counselor, geriatric mental health specialist, and dementia coach. I'm so happy that you found us. Hey, everyone. It is my pleasure today to introduce Martha Ragnon. She is the Executive Vice President of the Southern Caregiver Resource Center, located in San Diego. And she's got a background in health and public policy. And I was really happy to invite you on, Martha, because you are just as passionate about this work with caregivers as I am. And you have a lot of experience in working with caregivers that are caring for folks that are living with dementia too. Thank you so much for coming on.
Laura, I am so excited to be here. It is really a pleasure. And I can't wait to see what we're able to share with our audience about caregiving and, of course, dementia.
Yay. Do you mind? I always like to give people an idea of just who you are and what brought you into this line of work, whether you have a personal experience or just something that really has opened or paved the way for you to end up doing this work.
How did I get here? Absolutely. Yeah. I was actually caring for my great aunt. My uncle, her husband had died and she was left alone. And it was one of those things that I grew up with her. She was like my grandmother and we lived next door to each other. And so as a child, I always was in her life. She was always in my life. And as you become an adult and you have your life and your children and your job, I would always frequent her and visit her. And when he died, I was thinking, there's no way I can just turn my back on her. She really is elderly. She's frail. And I didn't know, even know she had dementia at that time. And so I just started being more and more involved. And as a lot of us who have been caregivers know, that it starts trickling. You start maybe just visiting, and then you start doing the laundry, and then you start doing the cooking. And before you knew it, I was her caregiver. And so in being her caregiver, I realized that I couldn't do it all. I was working full time. I was pregnant with my first child. I had to go back and forth, driving to work and then driving to her house. And all of that was just taking a toll. And at that time, I realized something's got to give. We really have to change how we are balancing everything. And my husband and I decided, let's just bring her to live with us. And so we did, and she started showing more and more signs of dementia and memory loss. And I figured I can do this. I can just Google it. I can pick up a brochure, no problem. And I realized that it was too much. Emotionally, it was too much. Mentally, I was exhausted. Physically, of course, I was just unable to do everything that needed to be done. And so I reached out to the organization that I now work for.
Oh, no way. This was your first introduction to them.
Yes, it was. And they were so helpful. They gave me such a wealth of resources that I said, okay, this is what I need to do in order to help her. And that's how I became involved as a caregiver and now as with this organization.
Tell us a little bit about the organization, because we have listeners from... We actually have listeners from 52 countries, which is really exciting. Wow. I know, I got to look at our stats the other day. And so we have folks listening from all over. And whether you're from the United States or another country, there are such a variety of services and resources available. And I personally am always so curious about what other places are doing and what we could be doing better, or if there's an overlap between certain services that people might be able to look for. So yeah, if you don't mind, just share with us about what your organization does.
So we are located in San Diego, California, and we're right at the border of Mexico and the US. And so our area is very unique. We have bi-regional people who are living in both sides of the border. And so we do have a very unique set of caregiving needs. But having said that, all of our services are free or at a very low cost to family caregivers. And it's really anyone who is caring for another individual. who has some sort of a cognitive impairment like dementia, Alzheimer's, memory loss, or is caring for someone who is elderly, frail, needs assistance with activities of daily living, and they're over 60, we're actually very unique. And I have to plug this, Laura, because California is really at the forefront of aging services. We are actually part of a network of 11 caregiver resource centers throughout the state. And our goal is to make sure that no one in anywhere in California is left thinking that they are alone while they are caring for someone. Even our model is caring for those who care for others, because we want to make sure that they feel supported. And to find out more information about the statewide system, you can go to caregivercalifornia.org.
Okay. I'm going to get that information for listeners just so that I'll put it in the show notes.
Sure.
I'm writing this down. I love your motto, caring for others that care for others. I like that a lot. So tell me, I'm curious about what services are provided. And then I'm also really curious about the funding, like how it's free to people. So how do you get paid?
How does it work? I guess I can start with that one. Yes, it's everything we do is we really serve those individuals who are maybe have middle to lower income. We don't ask for any income verification. So really all you have to say is, I live within your service area. I'm caring for my mom. Even if she lives in another county in California, or even in another state, if you live within San Diego County or Imperial County and you are a caregiver, we will help you. We understand that by helping you, you're able to care for that individual in a better way, right? You have support, you have the systems, you have the resources. So therefore you're able to care for those individuals. Our funding is comprised of federal, state, and local grants. So a lot of government funding. And then of course we fundraise. We're always fundraising. We get a lot of donations. It's really great, Laura, when we get those messages from people that who say, you've been so helpful, here's $20. And it's so great because that's something that really comes from a personal level. And we get multiple, what we call recurring caregivers. Maybe they used to care for their parents and now they're caring for their spouse. And so a lot of times we do get donations from those individuals.
They've seen the value of what you have to offer. So they know where to go. They're tapped in. Yeah. What are the services?
We provide everything we do is English and Spanish, and not just translated into Spanish, but really culturally appropriate. We provide support groups, and they're not actually led just by volunteers. They're led by our clinical staff, so that if something comes up, if there's a really situation where you need some sort of intervention, our staff is trained to do that. We also have programs that are evidence-based and evidence-informed that focus specifically on dementia. And so if you are caring for someone in that situation, it's a series of classes where you learn about dementia, where you learn how to manage those difficult behaviors, and then we incorporate some self-care. So it's really a win for anyone who's a caregiver. And then we also have educational programs, which is what I head at the organization. We do all of the trainings, the classes, the conferences. We have live streamed classes that you can access online on YouTube. And so we encourage people to also visit our website, which is scrc.care. And they can access not only the videos, but also our fact sheets. We have several fact sheets, especially people who are newly diagnosed with, let's say, Parkinson's. What is that? What is this going to look like? What are their treatment options? And so we have those fact sheets for people to access.
So for our listeners that are not local to San Diego area, is that a resource that they can tap into as far as that website? And
absolutely, yes. If you, it doesn't matter where you live, if you visit the website and you want to look for more information, you can access that, not a problem, as well as the videos, as well as some of the recordings that is available to people on the website.
Nice. Thank you. Yeah, no, I'm this isn't a podcast that's a plug for this organization. And what I love is that I love to explore, like I said, what organizations are out there, what services are out there for people. So no matter where you live, you can be thinking about, is there something like this in my area or not? And like you said, Martha, in this day and age where we have access to technology, people can hop on the website and get information. And yeah, so much appreciated. So you are in a unique position. And I just love meeting you. Like I said, I'm so happy to meet a like-minded kindred spirit, somebody that is just passionate about helping folks and working with folks that are in the situation, find themselves as caregivers. You're in a unique position because you are the executive vice president of this organization, and you have also been a caregiver to a family member. So I'm really curious to talk to you about self-care and your experience with self-care. How do caregivers, or how do people who maybe have never had to even think about their quote self-care routine or be diligent about scheduling that or making sure that's happening, just tell us a little bit.
How does it work?
Yeah. And what do you find with the folks that you work with? Just share with us.
Obviously, something that I have come to realize in myself, and especially as a former caregiver, is that there isn't going to be any time if we don't schedule it. And I know that's an excuse that I hear a lot when I talk to caregivers, when I do these classes and conferences, is I don't have time for this. I don't have time for this. Why are you telling me? I know that I have to do some self-care, but I don't have time for this. And what I try to really emphasize is, if you don't take care of yourself as a caregiver, you're not going to be able to take care of that individual. You're going to end up being sick. And research proves that. It really supports the notion that when we are so bogged down, so stressed, so overwhelmed, we get sick. And then we're not able to care for those individuals. And now you have two people who are needing a caregiver.
You're now a care receiver.
Right? As a caregiver. And so what I developed recently, and we just started this year, is a series of self-care classes online, English and Spanish. And it just takes 5 to 10 minutes to incorporate some self-care techniques on a daily basis. I'm not even saying you have to stop what you're doing for 5 hours so that you can implement some self-care. It could be as simple as drinking coffee, which is my happy place, right? It's my favorite thing to do. It's such an adult thing to do, and I do it by myself, but it's what just frees my mind at that moment from all the stressors that I have to do. And it does incorporate some mindfulness and some meditative exercises, but it's really about self-introspection, just really taking stock of what is it that I need right now. Because Laura, that when we were talking about earlier, that when we're hungry, our body is telling us, like, starts with the tummy rumbling, and maybe you get lightheaded and you get headaches, and that's your cue for you got to eat something. When we know our bodies, and when we realize that we are feeling stressed, that's when we need to stop, take a breath, maybe go outside, have a sip of that coffee, and then come back to the caregiving responsibilities.
I hear you saying a couple things with that example. And one is the first thing, having awareness, first of all, because I think we caregivers just go on autopilot and we're not even conscious of what's happening within ourselves. We're so externally focused, which is the stress response anyways. And we get really good at that and turning off our own internal needs. So the first thing I was really hearing you say is having awareness, first of all, like your example of being hungry, paying attention to, oh, okay, something is occurring that I'm needing this break, or I would benefit from this break. And then the second thing that was standing out to me is this, the whole mindfulness piece of consciously drinking your coffee, not just staying in your head and going through your to-do list and multitasking physically or mentally while you're doing it, but being aware while you're doing it sets makes it very different.
Because that is the difference between I'm just going to guzzle down this coffee versus I'm going to drink it with intention. And when I do that, I am feeling relaxed. I am enjoying the moment. The caregiving responsibilities are still going to be there. The challenges are still going to be there. I am not promising that with this coffee, everything that is troubling you is going to go away. But in that moment, it is, because you're not thinking about it. And so our classes, our programs really emphasize this. We devise and really develop our programs centered around that notion that, yes, we understand caregiving is difficult. We know, especially if you're caring for someone with Alzheimer's and dementia, it's even more challenging. And the research is there. It's more troubling because you can't rationalize with a person who has a cognitive impairment. You can't explain you already ate or sit over here or we're just going to wait 5 minutes. It doesn't work that way. So when you practice these self-care activities, as small as they might seem, it really goes a long way to then be able to be refreshed, be ready to tackle whatever it is that's coming, especially if you're caring for someone with dementia.
Yeah, absolutely.
My aunt had dementia. So I did learn to go back to your prior comment when you were talking about me and my experience as a caregiver. I did find myself thinking, okay, I cannot explain to her over and over. It's getting frustrating. I've got to do something else, and that redirecting. And so we teach people how to do that and how to find other ways to help you.
Skill. It's so much like learning a new language. And,
yes.
And what I often talk about with people is, depending on your relationship with the person that you're caring for, so many people are grieving while they're caring. And mm-hmm. it can be really what can make those creative approaches and interventions helpful is when you're able to tap into that creative part of your mind. And it's difficult to tap into that creative part of your mind when you are grieving or stressed out. Or so this mind, these exercises, these self-care class that you're talking about, I haven't seen it, I haven't done it, but I'm really excited about it because of the fact that it is giving, it sounds like it's giving people real concrete skills on the little things that they can control. And
we call it developing your toolbox. Okay. And so if you have a bag of tools ready and you already know what you have in there, when you need a certain tool, you can just get it. And of course, I'm talking about imaginary toolbox. I don't need you to lug a toolbox with you, but that way, if I know my aunt, I knew what to expect, then I knew what kind of tool to utilize at that moment. And it was going to be okay because I've already seen the results. And then maybe the next day, try something else because that other tool that I used the day before didn't work. So now I have to use another tool. And so it's really getting to know what works for you as a caregiver.
Yeah. I love that point that you make, because so often in so many areas of our lives, we are waiting for the crisis to hit before then we look for a solution. And mm-hmm. what I hear you saying is when we can learn those tools, when we develop that toolbox, then in the moment of crisis or in the moment that you really need to, you're not able to think creatively, mm-hmm. you're all ready to go and can access that. So that's great. So, okay. Say somebody has learned, they have their own toolbox. On a side note, you're talking about this class and everything. Is this San Diego area or is this something that—
Yes, it's San Diego area. And a lot of it has to do with our funding. And so our service area is San Diego and Imperial counties, again, along the border of the southern border of the United States. And so, yes, if you have someone who lives in those two counties, then yes, you would be able to take advantage of these classes. However, a lot of our self-care management classes are online, and you can access those. And like I said, we have this series that is going on through July, but it's going to stay there. And not everything we do now virtually, you can access again and again. So you can definitely access it through our website. And there you have some tools of how to do that.
Mm-hmm. That's fantastic. Thank you for sharing that. Because I want to make sure that everybody has access or knows what access they have to these helpful tools. The other thing that I'll just throw out too for our listeners, there are programs throughout the states that do have their own version of this family caregiver kind of support. And I was excited to have Martha come on because yours looks a little different mm-hmm. than a lot of the other counties and states.
Yes.
And I love that piece. I'm always a big fan of thinking outside the box. And I think even more so, I love grassroots efforts. And
I'm glad that you said that, Laura, because yes, and we are a very unique organization. We've been around since 1987, and it really grew as a need at the state level back in 1984, when there was a group of women who were caring for their spouses who had Alzheimer's. And so it became something of a, hey, we need resources at the state level. And so then the state funding evolved from there. And we do depend now on state funding to provide these resources, which are growing, and the needs are growing exponentially every year. The uniqueness of our program is really based also on the location. Our county is at the forefront, and really the state, like I said earlier, but our county is really aggressively trying to make sure that we are prepared for the future, for the aging populations of the future. And from walking communities, from resources that grow with the residents, to robust social services agencies that provide wraparound services, we are a part of that to make sure that people don't forget about the family caregiver, because it's often the individual with the disease that gets the funding, that gets the attention, which is great. Right, of course. But what about the people behind that individual?
I agree.
And we need that, right? You get it. We need to not forget about the caregiver, because when I was with my aunt, I was the one talking to the doctor. I was the one administering the medication. I was the one informing the doctor of any changes. It wasn't my aunt. She had dementia. She didn't know where we were. And so it's really imperative that physicians are aware. And so we're starting this movement of incorporating physicians working with social service agencies such as ours to make sure they provide a wraparound services, healthcare needs for patients.
Yay. I love hearing that. It's so important. And, and we could have a whole episode of talking about caregivers' experiences with physicians. I might even just do that. I might even have an episode because I have a Facebook group on the side. For those of you listening, it's called Get in the Lifeboat. I'm not in there very often, but it's a really sweet place for caregivers, for specifically for those caring for folks living with dementia. And I work with doctors at our local hospital. They have a geriatric rotation week, and they have me come in and talk about these things. What is a caregiver's experience? What are the resources in the community? How can physicians really help support folks that are living with dementia and then folks that are caring for people living with dementia? And so I did a poll in that Facebook group. What would you like doctors to know about your experience? And oh my gosh, we were flooded. And I took every one of those comments and shared them with these physicians. And you and I both know, and probably most of you listening have probably experienced a situation, whether it was with a primary care physician or a specialist, that didn't maybe go so well, that could have gone better. So I love that this is part, I think a huge part of moving forward in this world is making sure that the medical providers really understand what is it like on the ground for people and what is the real reality that people are experiencing.
Absolutely. Especially, I think, patients with dementia, Alzheimer's, memory loss, you come with a group of people. It's not, you cannot expect that it's just that one individual. I get that when you go to the doctor, when I go to the doctor, it's me and I'm going to talk to the doctor. But if I have dementia, I need somebody to take me. I need somebody to drive me. I need somebody to talk to the doctor. And so you have to incorporate the caregiver. And that's what we are out there advocating all the time.
Yep. And even to get, even for the physician to have a clear understanding about what's really happening, because quite often when asked, somebody might report that they're just fine. There's no concerns at all. I'm able to do everything on my own.
And yes.
Meanwhile, we've had all kinds of things going on the side that a physician really wouldn't know.
Oh yeah. My aunt was fine all the time. Every time he asked her, how are you doing? Oh, I'm doing fine. Like,
Yeah. I can cook, I can clean, I can drive, I can everything.
Well, she's not.
Yeah. So one of the other things that we started to touch on, I want to circle back, because when we were talking about this grassroots piece and also with caregivers, and you are in such a unique position being on a border county like that in California, I'm always so interested, especially with our listeners all over the world, the cultural piece of really being supportive of caregivers and the experience of those people that are moving through the medical model, if you will, with their care. Can you speak a little bit to that?
Absolutely. I'm so glad you brought that up, because we also employ a very unique way to outreach in the community, very grassroots, like you said. We have what are called community outreach workers or promotoras, who are engaging daily with the community, literally boots on the ground, walking to the DMV, churches, food lines, libraries, talking to people. And that's where we find that caregivers are, perhaps they didn't know that's what they were looking for, because many times they know, I don't need that. My mom is the one that needs help. I don't need help. But as we talk to them, we realize that they need help, because they don't know how to deal with trying to rationalize with the mom who has dementia, or the dad, or fill in the blank. And so we really talk to them and say, these classes are for you. These resources are for you. And that's where we realize that we can't do your standard, send out a flyer and just put it online. It's not going to work that way. We really need to talk to people. And not all service agencies, not all nonprofits are able to do that. It takes a lot of work, a lot of resource, a lot of people power to be able to do that. And, but we believe that is the way to reach the targeted populations that we are serving.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
People who need it.
People that really need it. I love that. Gosh, it was such cool, innovative. And it's not rocket science, right?
No.
But we forget. We jump 10 steps ahead.
Yes.
And this is great. Do you find, you started to touch on that a little bit. I'm curious about your experience with the resistance. Do you find resistance to accepting help? I'm thinking culturally, I'm thinking economically. There are a lot of people in our culture, in our society, and in different cultures in our society. I know myself, people may have heard some of my story, but I grew up in a very off-grid kind of situation. My dad was a Vietnam vet. I grew up with this idea that, quote, the man, the government, you don't go to them for help. That's not the place that those aren't the services that you trust. And I'm curious, because this seems like a way to reach people that might otherwise be resistant to receiving help from more formal services.
Absolutely. I can see your experience be very similar to the experience of the people we talk to, in the sense that there's a trust issue. Why are you offering me this for free? Are you sure? No, it cannot be that great. Oh, you need all of my information. No, we don't means test. We don't require insurance. We don't ask, who are you caring for? Do you live in San Diego County? That's really the gist of it. And making sure that those qualifications align, because we focus on individuals who are caring for adults to over 18, over 60. But the people that we talk to, we realize that initially they're very reluctant because of what you said earlier, culturally. What are people going to think that I can't handle caring for my dad, my spouse? How embarrassing. They're going to judge me. It's my responsibility. I'm the only daughter. We hear all these stories all the time. And so it's really breaking down this stigma, these barriers that they have built up for themselves of why they can't ask. And then when they hear a lot of us who have these personal experiences talking about them, mentioning, hey, I also had to solicit help because I couldn't handle it. And that's why earlier I said, I could have just gone online. I could have just picked up the phone, but I had to really realize I can't do it. In asking for help, we say it's not a sign of weakness, it's a sign of strength. Yes. And many times it's really breaking down these self-imposed barriers. And then it's really rewarding when we see these individuals who said, oh, I'm so glad you talked to me. I know I was so reluctant, but now I see the benefits. And now I'm telling everybody in my family that they need to go and connect.
Love it. I love that. And on that same theme of building, you're building community in that mm-hmm. way too. I'm sure not a lot.
And our programs are devised, I mentioned they're evidence-based, evidence-informed. So we just don't make programs because we have nothing else to do. They're really based on research and culturally appropriate and what works for caregivers who are caring for someone with dementia, Alzheimer's, and memory loss. But then the idea is that after you finish these classes, you have built this network of support, this community. You went through the classes together. And so we have this communal gathering at the end, and they exchange information and contact, and they stay in touch, and they then provide that support for each other outside of our program. And that's the idea, because many times they feel so isolated, and we were able to reach them when they were at a supermarket, and now they have this group of support that they didn't have.
That's amazing. Oh, the good work. I want to ask another little bit of a personal question. What do you wish that you knew when you were caring for your aunt?
I wish that I would have realized it sooner, that we have this idea. And if you have a family who is strong and who's supportive, good for you. I am very happy. That is wonderful that you do. But that's not always the case. And so I think initially I depended on the family because I thought, hey, my aunt needs help. Let's help her. And I came to the realization that it's not for everybody. Caregiving is not for everybody. And that's okay. And if somebody tells you in many different ways, I don't want to get involved, even though they're family, it's okay. Who else can I ask for help? It doesn't have to be your family. And I think many times individuals think, I have to ask my sisters, my brother, and my aunts, my uncles, my parents, and then that's it. But many times you don't have that. And so we want to be out there telling you, we'll be your family, right? We'll be your support system. Yes, we're not related, but we understand. And so it's okay. Support doesn't have to come from your blood relatives. It can be from other like-minded individuals who are experiencing the same thing.
There can be such comfort in knowing that you're not alone in your experience. Meeting other people that are going through a similar situation can be so validating in a lot of ways.
Yes.
That, yeah. Building.
And so I was hesitant, or at least I waited too long to figure out that maybe my family was not the place where I was going to get the support, and then turning to Southern Caregiver Resource Center, but I'm glad I did.
Once you did it. Yeah. Yeah. Martha, this has been such a great conversation, but I want to ask you, is there anything else that you can think of that might be helpful for folks to know that we didn't touch on today?
Yes, absolutely. I know I mentioned it before, but you don't have to do caregiving alone. Make sure you reach out for help. Help is okay. It can come in many different forms. You can't expect somebody to say, I'll take your mom for the whole week and take care of her. But maybe that individual can help you with, I don't know, maybe buying some groceries when you're not able to, or taking out the trash cans. You maybe talk to your neighbor and they can help you. And those little acts bring a lot of relief to the caregiver. So don't be afraid to ask for help. As minimally as you think it is, sometimes those are the activities that people are willing to do. The little asks.
The little ones. And I think here, people that are more, quote, natural caregivers are not people that are used to receiving from, they're used to giving. And so I just want to emphasize what you said that about asking for help. This is going to be a challenge, or could be a challenge for a lot of people to do that. And you framed it that it's a strength, not a weakness, to do that. And it really is. It's recognizing that you, as the person who has taken on this whole big role, you're building your team and you need access to your resources. And so in order to be, for lack of a better word, a good manager, you need to have a good team and people that you can rely on. And so asking for help is not a sign of weakness. It's a sign of a strong person that recognizes how to manage themselves and the situation and the person they're caring for moving forward.
So, absolutely.
Well, Martha, how can folks find more about you? Tell us.
I'd be happy to go to scrc.care. And that's our website, stands for Southern Caregiver Resource Center. And that's our organization. And if you are interested in anywhere in California, we are, like I said, a group of 11 caregiver resource centers. So we can connect you to the appropriate resource center, and that's caregivercalifornia.org.
Got it. Okay. And again, I'll have these links in the show notes for folks too. Martha, thank you so much. And just really, thank you for the work that you're doing. I know just in the work that I do that there are so many people that have been impacted. And I have no doubt that the amount of people that have been touched by the work that you do, as evidenced by yourself and the support you have received.
Yes, I really am very thankful to this organization who helped me when I needed it the most. And that's why I've made it my passion, my goal, my mission to help out others. And I get to do it every day through my work. And so thank you, Laura, for allowing us to talk about this. And hopefully a lot of caregivers out there can connect and get the services that they need.
Fantastic. Thanks so much.
Thank you.
I hope you enjoyed this episode. If you have comments or would like to send us a message, you can send it to info@lifeonrepeatpodcast.com. Please also consider following us at Life on Repeat Podcast, either on Instagram or Facebook. The information shared in this podcast is not a substitute, nor is it meant to convey professional, legal, psychological, financial, or medical advice. If you can use such services, please seek them out from someone you trust.